Welcome again to another episode of Inside the World of Duotone. I'm Lewis Crathan, and today this is a very exciting podcast because we've got a new product to announce. Joining me all the way from Hawaii in Maui, we have Sky Solbak, one of our designers at Duotone. Good evening to you, Sky. It's good morning for me, but good evening to you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we will get on to this new product, which I can't wait to start talking about with you. But first, Sky, a bit of an introduction for you. How can you tell us about how you got involved as being a kite designer, which you are now for Duotone?
I've been with Boards & More since 2004 and working with Ken Winner for the bulk of that time, about 18 years, and been involved in the development of most of our kites over the years and lots of other products like wings and, when wing flaring came along and wing boards and hydrofoils. And I started doing surfboards back in 2010. So been involved in that for quite a few years. So over the years, just working with Ken on all of our various kites, Rebels, and way back to the Rhinos when we had those, and pretty much everything in between. I guess when winging came along in 2018, we started to get really busy, and particularly Ken Winner started to get really busy splitting his time between wing design and kite design, and me being his sort of main right-hand tester. I was helping him do the development of both of those sports. And at a certain point, it just got, the workload got to be too much. And so it was kind of the perfect time for us to be able to split that workload. So Ken just was able to focus more on wings, and he handed over all the kite design work to me. And so that transition took place, I guess, started to take place around 2020, maybe 2021. And, since then I've, pretty much been designing, a lot of the kites, the Neos, the Rebels, and some other models we're working on. So about, 3 or 4 years now, I guess I've been working on kites pretty full time.
Okay. So it's been kind of a calm transition. They haven't just thrown you straight in the deep end here.
Well, there was a bit of that too, but I saw it coming luckily, and, I was prepared for it. So, I wouldn't say it definitely wasn't a really easy transition, but it's been great, and it's been a challenge for sure, but a welcome challenge, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for that nice introduction. Now we're going to talk a little bit more as the podcast goes on about how we have many designers at Duotone. But something you mentioned quite interesting there was with Ken. You actually spent time on the Rebel, which was one of the kites that definitely he was the grandfather of, if you like. It is time to announce that the Rebel D-Lab will be happening. This is major news around the world. There's been lots of rumours about that, and we're going to go straight into a discussion about that now. What was the inspiration behind designing the brand new Duotone Rebel D-Lab? Was there a particular design briefing you aimed at, or a specific rider experience that you wanted to enhance?
That's a great question. Whenever we start a new project like that, it's hard to know what's coming down the pipeline before you, until you start making prototypes and really start trying kites. So we had this concept, basically an idea that a lightweight, Alula Rebel could be quite a nice kite because, we saw some obvious performance advantages that we could possibly achieve with Alula. And we just started making some prototypes, and it really wasn't until we started testing kites and feeling it out that we sort of decided on a real concrete direction for the kite. I think in the beginning it was just like, okay, let's take an existing Rebel, make it out of Alula, and kind of see what happens. And then throughout the process, of course, new ideas came up, things got refined, and it actually ended up kind of going in a little different direction than we first anticipated, but what we ended up with is an amazing new kite that I can't wait for people to try.
Can you talk me through that first moment when you got a prototype? Now we know how good the Alula is, and we know the Evo D-Lab has been so successful in competition and giving people that edge. It was the best kite out there for quite a while now. So that How did that feel when you had that first kite, that prototype of a Rebel D-Lab? I don't know where you flew that to keep that a secret, but what did that feel like when you launched that for the first time?
Honestly, it was kind of a letdown, the first prototype, if I'm being honest. You know, it didn't feel all that different from a Rebel, the first one I did. You know, it flew pretty well, but it definitely didn't have much magic. And so it took quite a bit of refining and a lot of prototypes to reach the point they were at now. So sorry for the letdown from the story, but the first prototype was definitely not magic.
Maybe I was stereotypically thinking every time you do a new idea, it's just this wonderful magic moment, the word magic you used there. Is that wrong of me to assume that? How often do you have brand new prototype with new materials and it actually blows your mind? Does it maybe not happen as much as I think it does the first time round?
No, it definitely happens. You know, sometimes you get lucky and hit it out of the park with the first prototype, but more often than not, you know, kites are the result of a lot of prototypes and a lot of, you know, refining and tuning and lots of iterations to sort of, you know, just fine tune all the details. And, you know, I guess it could be said for designing anything, but for sure, when you're designing kites, it's kind of a mix of all of the design parameters. You know, it's not just one thing that makes a magic kite. It's kind of like you start with a concept, you try it, you realize, okay, we need to make these adjustments. And over time, you just, you know, you sort of bring it all together, hopefully, and find a balance of, you know, having all the right, you know, parameters that you need to make the kite to give it that magic feeling.
Now, the Rebel D-Lab is really being anticipated as a groundbreaking kite. Can you tell me and walk us through some of the most innovative features and how they contribute to its superior performance?
Yeah, so one thing I really wanted to try when we started developing the Rebel D-Lab was to experiment with smaller leading edge diameters. You know, a smaller leading edge can definitely be achieved with Alula, more so than a lot of other materials, because of the stiffness of Alula and the ability to inflate it to higher pressures. So that was one area that I really wanted to explore and something that ended up working out really well with the Rebel D-Lab. So I would say if there's one thing to sort of pinpoint, I think if you pick up or, you know, see the Rebel D-Lab for the first time, you'll definitely notice that it has a pretty small leading edge. The center diameter is actually pretty similar to, you know, what you might expect from like a Rebel SLS, but as it gets out towards the tips, the leading edge tapers off quite a bit and has pretty thin tips. And that does a few things for the Rebel D-Lab. It helps it to fly faster. So it's, you know, the tips are less draggy. That helps it, you know, like pure flying speed, actually flying through the window. The kite seems to definitely fly faster and get to the edge quicker than a bigger leading edge would. Mm-hmm. It also helps reduce drag when the kite is steering. So you have this really smooth, drag-free steering sensation when the kite is looping or, you know, flying up and down. And then it depowers quite quickly too, because you have really low drag tips. So when the kite, you know, rockets to the edge of the window and you sheet out, it really rocks forward in the window and gives you really complete depower. So I would say those three things, those are kind of the main performance advantages of that smaller leading edge. And I mentioned that we're pumping it to higher pressure. We're actually pumping it to 10 PSI.
Wow.
So that's quite a bit more than, you know, our standard 7 or 8 PSI that we do on an SLS, for example.
That's quite interesting. You actually talk about how the material, the Alula and the leading edge, is allowing you to make a thinner leading edge. Of course, we all want to do that with the kites, but they can fold in half. But because it's stiffer and because, like you said, you can pump it up even harder, it can give you all of those benefits of a thin leading edge. It's funny, I feel like that was explored a little bit quite a while back in kiteboarding, but the material maybe wasn't there to deal with it. Was it Cuban fiber that used to be used at one point?
Yep. Yeah, that was way back. Best kiteboarding was using Cuban fiber. And I'm not sure if they were pumping it to really high pressures. Maybe they were. But yeah, it's definitely a huge benefit of Alula that it has that structure and stiffness and, you know, the durability to be able to pump up to 10 PSI safely. And we've done some really cool things with the leading edge closing seam. We've done a lot of testing for durability there, and we can safely pump kites to 10 PSI and well beyond, actually, with our new closing seam.
You've spoken to me about how you get different prototypes and that can be a long process, but what else goes on behind the scenes? You know, you're on the computer, you're doing a lot of CAD. Who else is involved in the process of creating a kite like this?
Well, you know, we have our whole team of you know, everyone at Board Zamora. We're, you know, we have a lab in Germany, in the office in Munich, where we're doing seam testing. That's been a big part of our development over the last couple of years, and plays a pretty crucial role in a kite like the Rebel D Lab with the new seam technology we're using. You know, team riders, obviously, and our whole, you know, our whole R&D team, we all get together and test. I think I flew to Spain three or four times last year just for Rebel D Lab testing. So once to the Canaries, and I think three times to Tarifa to meet with the guys from Munich. They flew down to meet us. We had Reno Ramil from Brazil fly over to meet us. We did some testing with Andrea Principi recently in Tarifa. So, you know, we had a bunch of people involved and just try to get as many, you know, hands on the kite as possible and get everyone's feedback and just try to make progress as quickly as we can.
So for a designer, something that's always interested me is that you do have to listen to team riders. Well, you don't have to if you want to be a real dictator designer. They're out there, yeah. Trust me, where it's your way and that's all that happens. What do you do when you've got team riders or people having a direct disagreement on something about the kite? You as a neutral trying to take in all the information, how do you deal with that when you've got two completely different responses about how a kite's working?
I mean, you just have to listen to everyone's feedback, and generally the type of feedback I want to hear is what people don't like about the kite. Of course it's nice to hear what people do like about it, but you know, the whole reason you get together to test is so people can sort of pick the kite apart and say, well, you know, it does this well, but it doesn't do this well, and I really need it to do this other thing well. And you know, it can be a little bit of a mess when you get a lot of people together and you have a lot of differing opinions. But I think over the course of a development cycle, gathering all that feedback and having all that input is really important. And, you know, I don't think there's any other way to really develop a kite than to have all that feedback and bring everyone together and kind of, you know, get everyone's opinion. So, and usually I think, when you have good riders, people who kind of are used to flying a lot of different kites and kind of have a really good feel for, you know, the way a kite should fly. People like Reno Romeo, like Andrea Principi, these guys are so dialed in. Yourself, I'm sure, you know, same thing. You're so dialed into the gear you're using, and you can pinpoint, you know, the slightest little performance thing that an average rider might not feel. That's really important to have that kind of feedback. And generally, I think we end up agreeing on a lot more than we disagree, because I think good riders kind of generally want to have the same thing. They want to have a kite that is really intuitive to ride and a kite that you can jump on and feel comfortable. And, you know, and of course, having all the high performance things that a team rider needs as well.
It's always impressed me seeing how well riders can communicate with designers. Not all riders can, by the way, as well. Like, I'm not always working with the R&D team like some of the others, excuse me. But I've always been impressed with just how there's almost like a language I've seen externally that they can speak with you as designers. And it isn't every pro kite boarder that can do this. So that language you seem to speak and the feedback, you're not talking just like you said about all the things you like. You're being quite critical, but it's almost like a sensible language which you speak, because it's really important that you get quickly to the next stage of the next prototype as quick as you can, because time is a big deal. I mean, how many prototypes, for example, could you tell me that you produced for this Rebel D Lab?
That's a good question. I mean, the development cycle was probably a little over a year, and I mean, I would have to probably count, but I would upwards of 60 plus kites. I would imagine something in that, wow, in the ballpark.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to touch on the team rider feedback. I mean, yeah, we definitely have, like, I think Ken and I, especially working together for so many years, we developed, you know, terminology for so many different things. Like, we have a bunch of different ways you can describe how the bar feel of a kite is, you know, like, and how, you know, we have different ways to explain how the turning speed of the kite is and depower and all these things. But even getting together with team riders who maybe don't have that same vocabulary and don't use the same terminology, they can, if they're a good rider and they have a good feeling for a kite, they can still bring that information across, you know, even if it's not in the exact terminology that we're used to. I think a good rider is always able to, you know, take a kite out for 5 minutes, come in and say, okay, it does this, this, and this. And, you know, he can give you really quick, direct feedback. And that's really important to get on to the next prototype.
And the best riders I've witnessed in our brand are very good at just talking about tweaks to bridles. You know, they really are smart people that know they can change the bridle points. It affects the kite in this way and that way. And it's what I'm the most proud of, I think, when working with the brand for Duotone myself. I've been with 9 years now. You obviously a lot longer, Sky, but the involvement of water sports people is really special with our brand. And I think that that's something you have to look at with any brand, is like, who is actually behind making this stuff? And it's lovely that so many of the riders input with the products that we have at Duotone. Let's talk a little bit now, Sky, about the performance benefits of the Rebel D-Lab specifically. I'm interested in what this kite is going to do for those that are flying the SLS models at the moment. What sort of specific techniques or styles does it excel in? Obviously, you'd think big air and jumping big is huge, but how will it really differ from the SLS and older Rebel models?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's important to point out that it's a really easy kite to ride. So I think when everyone thinks of an Alula kite, they think, oh, super high performance, and maybe that's, you know, maybe they think it's a difficult kite to ride, or they don't need to have quite the performance of the Alula. But I think the first thing to point out is it's a really comfortable, easy kite to ride. I think anyone who's ridden an Alula kite, like the Evo D-Lab, for example, would be able to tell you that Alula, although it's stiff and high performance and lightweight, it has this really kind of comfortable feel. Like, you can ride an Alula kite in a lot of wind, really strong, gusty wind, and it just sort of smooths out the wind. It makes everything sort of feel a lot more effortless. You don't feel every gust. It kind of absorbs the gusts in a way where it's kind of just smooths out the ride. And that's definitely true for the new Rebel D-Lab. I think it's, you know, it's a high performance kite. It's a really high jumper. It's got amazing hang time. It's really easy to jump, but it's just, it has this really smooth feeling. Like, you can ride it really powered up in a really strong gusty wind, and it just sort of smooths out the gusts and makes everything feel comfortable. And I think really the magic of the kite is, especially, you know, it has the structure of 5 struts. So, and it's a kite that's, you know, it's a big air kite. It's meant to be ridden in a lot of wind. So you can heavily load up this kite, you know, ride a 10 meter kite in 30 knots of wind, fully loaded. And it just feels really smooth and really comfortable. And it doesn't sort of, the feel of the kite doesn't really change throughout its range. So you can ride it sort of moderately powered, and you have like a really nice bar position where the, you know, the bar is at a comfortable distance from your body. And you have a really defined edge when you sheet in. That's kind of where your max power is. And as the wind increases and, you know, goes up to, you know, whatever, 30 knots, or you're super lit out of your mind, the bar doesn't pull away, the bar position doesn't change, and the kite doesn't get overly hard or aggressive. It just sort of feels really similar throughout, you know, throughout a huge wind range. So it just handles, has a huge range and handles really well in really crazy conditions.
This is good for a number of reasons that come to me listening to you here, Sky. Not only is it good for the kiteboarder that can't have every single size of a range, for example, they can still kite and use all of their experience and not make too many changes to be the best kiteboarder they can be in different wind strengths. But first and foremost, where I've noticed the effects of being able to ride the kite in the same way is looking at the pro team when they go and compete. They like to be on, you know, they have their favorite sizes now. And rather than them saying, I need to be using a 9 or even a 10, it's a bit a bit lighter. They're still taking eights a lot of the time because the performance is still there. They can still get the height and hang time and that consistency in their riding they can keep. And that's really new to kiteboarding, I think, that a kite can still perform the same way, you know, I'm talking like not even changing trim settings and things like this. The kites do seem to find a way in all conditions to perform the way, the same sort of sizes. And do you feel that with the 5-strut here with the Rebel, because we don't have that with the Evo D-Lab, of course, remember, the 5-strut, is that making it even more versatile across wind ranges and conditions?
I mean, I think the 5-strut definitely gives a pretty clear point of difference between the Evo and the Rebel. I mean, a 5-strut for sure holds its shape really well in really strong wind, whereas a 3-strut, you know, at a certain point when you get really lit up, the kite starts to sort of, you know, lose its shape a little bit. And so I think that the top end of the Rebel is probably, you know, definitely has a higher top end than the Evo D-Lab. And you could argue for the Evo D-Lab, maybe it has a little bit better low end. But yeah, seeing as it's a big air specific kite, I think that the Rebel D-Lab is definitely designed to be ridden. You know, you can ride it in light wind for sure. It has a lot of power. It's a Rebel, but it really excels at the top end of its range. So when you start to get really lit up, I think that's when the kite really comes to life and really kind of shows its true colors. And that's when you're going to be jumping and getting second and third lifts and, you know, crazy hang time. And the kite does a really good job with the 5-struts of holding its shape. The profile stays really intact. It still steers just as fast when you're super loaded as it does when you're, you know, moderately loaded. And so, yeah, the 5-struts are really key for keeping its shape in strong wind.
Second and third lifts, these are the things we dream of as big air riders, when you get those sort of abnormal, almost feels like a thermal hit you or something, and you've gone back up and you really need a kite that's pulling high and hard above you. So this is something I can't wait to get maybe a 7 Rebel D-Lab out in one of the storms over here in the UK. We do get those crazy winds, and I'm really looking forward to trying this. Now, you can't just stop now, Sky, and think to yourself, well, we've done the Rebel D-Lab, it's ready, you know, like, let's have a break here. You're forever having to look into the future as a kite designer or a designer in general. So I'm asking you now, what trends or innovations do you see shaping the next generations of kites? How really do you plan to adapt or to lead in those areas?
You know, we started with this material, I don't want to call it a game, but with this push at, you know, developing new materials and implementing new materials a few years ago with the SLS and then with the D-Lab, and we're continuing to push really hard in that direction. And so I think that's a huge area. Just kite construction and working with different materials is going to be a major area of focus going into the future. You know, it's always hard to say which direction a sport or a product is going to take until you really start working on it. And I think it's sort of an iterative process, and it's something that you kind of discover as you go along. So I've been asked this question in the past, and I never quite know how to answer it other than that, you know, we're just like, I'm on the water every day. We're testing kites all the time. We're always trying new stuff. And we just kind of continue to look for ways that we can improve and do better and make kites lighter and stronger and faster. And, you know, whatever we can do, we're always trying to just, as riders, I guess, just push things forward to the next level. So I'm not sure what our product range is going to look like in 5 years, but I can tell you that we're going to keep working and coming out with the best kites we possibly can.
Now, Duotone is the only brand with 3 kite and wing designers. That's unusual. We've spoken about the brand new laboratory, the D-Lab laboratory, where you can test anything in there, and you have a dedicated R&D team. What way does this professionalism help the development? Are you sharing ideas across the, you know, across the different sports with the different designers?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. We have weekly calls together with the whole R&D team, including the wing guys. So Ken Winter, you know, the whole Wing development team. We share information. You know, Ken and I both live on Maui. We also work together with the Spencer brothers here, who are developing our Wing boards and testing wings with Ken. So we all collaborate on you know, whatever projects we're working on. And then, of course, our whole R&D team in Munich and our other designer, Manuel, who now lives in Portugal, were, you know, on weekly meetings and sharing information. So it's just cool to have a group of really dedicated people who are really passionate about what they're doing. You know, everyone's just looking for ways to push forward and make things better. And I think, you know, we're all riders at heart, and we want to have the best possible gear. So having the opportunity to, you know, have access to all of this, you know, technology and budget to do things that we want to do is pretty awesome.
This laboratory, right, that you have, I really want to try and get inside your head now. I've never been in here. I want you to imagine, everybody listening now, that we're opening the door into this special laboratory. What do we see, Sky? Do we see crazy potions going on? Do we see chicken loops getting blasted to the billionth neutrons of power in there? Do we see someone tied up in lines? Like, what's going on inside the door of this laboratory?
Well, I actually just visited the lab for the first time in May. I was in Europe with my family, and we went to the office, and I got the full tour of the Duotone lab. And it's not big, but it's down in the basement of the office, and they've set up a dedicated section down there where they just have a bunch of machines, a bunch of really high tech looking machines. You walk in, and you know, there's just all these contraptions. We have a machine that does flutter tests. We have a machine that you can simulate, you know, solar, put it in and you can simulate like a year's worth of solar radiation in a very short amount of time. There's another machine that blasts, you know, different metal parts with salt, so you can see the effects of corrosion. Just all these different machines. And of course, the seam testing machines, where you can sew up a new seam construction, stick it on the machine, and basically have two arms that pull the material apart and see where it fails and you know, where it doesn't fail. And just all these contraptions. And they have a couple of people down there dedicated. That's their full-time job, just doing different seam constructions and testing all this stuff out. And it's pretty cool.
Wow, that does sound like an interesting place. There was a rumor going around amongst the team that that's the place the designers get locked up if they've been misbehaved. Is there any truth to this?
That might be. Yeah, they let me out. They gave me a tour and they let me out, so they didn't keep me locked in there, but that could be the case.
You've obviously been doing a good job. Now, this is a real question of mine coming in here now, is I'm always interested in the secrecy of testing. I have launched kites from some of the riders where they've said, look, this, you know, don't be looking at this kite too much, you know, like they're trying to kite somewhere differently. But for you, when you're testing a Rebel D-Lab, for example, where do you go? Are there any methods that you use to try and hide the fact that it's a new kite, maybe with the graphics or the lack of graphics, perhaps?
I kind of have my usual spot that I go to here. I have a little section of beach that not too many people kite. There's sort of kiters upwind of me and some kiters downwind, and I kind of go to a little section of beach where it's uncrowded, so I can kind of pump up my kites and have a little space to launch. And it's pretty low key in Maui. People, you know, there's other brands that are testing here. There's Nash, there's Cabrina, but everyone kind of has their own space, and we don't spy on each other too much. So it's not quite like the early days. I think like in the early 2000s, when everyone was, you know, the first bow kites and, you know, the kites were really, you know, people were exploring a lot of radical ideas back then. I think there was a lot more secrecy, but I think nowadays most kites look pretty similar, and our prototypes don't have any graphics on them. So you wouldn't be able to tell. You might see like, okay, it's a kite with an Alula leading edge. Maybe it's got a little different shape, but you know, there's not too much of that going on. I think we kind of all give each other space.
Well, that sounds nice in Hawaii, but is that the same for worldwide when you give one of the riders one of the kites? Does it happen in our sport where you see other brands maybe look at a shape of a kite and go, that's the perfect shape, I'm going to do that too. I mean, that is the, I guess, the sort of DNA of good design in some ways, being able to look at something and do it again.
I mean, yeah, you could argue that, but I think, you know, just the steps that you, like, even if you were trying to copy someone's kite, say you went to the beach and you saw some other brand had some new shape that you're interested in, you could try and copy it, and maybe you would make something that looked similar. But in order to dial in all the details and actually, you know, without having flown their kite and knowing how it performs, you know, and even if you did fly it and knew how it performs, it's such a long road to get there, because there's so many variables and so many small details that you have to dial in, from bridles and getting the arc width just perfect, and who knows what profile shapes they used, and you know, you'd have to measure their leading edge diameter in really, you know, in high detail, and you know, there's so many things going on that it's pretty hard to copy someone else's kite, even if you tried.
That's good to know. Finally, Sky, on the fact that we're sort of celebrating the Rebel D-Lab, I want to know from you, on a personal note, what you're most proud of, why you're most proud of it, and how you feel when you see riders out on the water using something that you've put so much effort into to create.
I mean, it's a great feeling when you get through the whole development process, because it's usually pretty hectic and pretty stressful, because, you know, we're trying to put out new kites as, you know, whenever we're able to come up with something really good and new, we want to get it out on the market. And we do have to hit our development timelines. So it's usually pretty stressful to get there and get kites in production. And I think just getting through that development process and seeing it through to production and getting the first samples and getting the first feedback from customers and riders and seeing people enjoy a product that you put so much work and effort and sweat and blood and tears into is always a good feeling. And as soon as that happens, then we're kind of on to the next product, and it's like head down again, back in the trenches, and just starting the whole process over again. But it's always a great feeling to finish a product, get it out on the water, and see people enjoy and have a great time. That's always an amazing feeling.
As always, Sky, it's been wonderful to talk with you today, one of our main designers at Geotone. Have a great sleep, I guess, Sky. It's about to start for me my day.
All right. Yeah. Thanks so much, Lewis. And hope to catch you later this summer in Europe, maybe.